So how did you say that the avatar synthesis ties in with them?
Avatar synthesis is from another solar system. He's a very advanced being on a similar level to the Christ himself, but with different talents. And he's on ray one, whereas the Christ is on ray two.
So is he one of those that you were talking about, though, that belong to Shambhala?
He goes in between the hierarchy and Shambhala. He has access to Shambhala, And so that's why it's important. And he has a specific work to help the Christ prepare for his return and to stimulate the evolution of humanity and to help. He's basically an assistant to the Christ, fulfilling energies that the Christ is not heavy in himself. The Christ is in love wisdom, and he's not into power. As example exemplified in the scripture where John and James came to Jesus and said, you know, this city refused us, so let's call down fire from heaven like let's call it down fire from heaven like Elijah did and consume these people. Wouldn't this be the thing to do if we, you know, we read the scriptures? And he says, well, you don't know what manner of spirit you are. But such an event would require ray one energy. And the ray one energy through power is, first of all, it has to destroy the impediments, and then it will add to building. It's a building and destructive energy both. But to build that which is new, the old often has to be destroyed. And so it's the destructive energy is very alarming to the people on ray 2, 4, and 6. But on ray 1, 3, and 5, they're a lot more comfortable with it.
So that's why a leader on ray 1 is very disruptive to average emotionally polarized people.
Yeah, like Trump is on ray 1 and Obama is on ray 2, 4, 6. So they can't see eye to eye very easy. But they both have performed essential things, you know. Okay, and they both have all kinds of things that they have done that the opposing rays don't agree with, which is interesting. But for those, what the Tibetan advises is to see the love that is behind the happenings of our time. He tells us to always see that, and there's always that element that is surfacing, no matter how much we disagree with what our politicians are doing, or what's going on, or what the scientists are doing, or what the educators are doing. There's always an element of love that is available to manifest. Okay, next we'll go into the Lords of Karma. Why do we need Lords of Karma? These Lords of Karma are very high entities, and they're Kumaras. They're on the level of Sanat Kumara himself. Matter of fact, it indicates that Sanat Kumara is one of the Lords of Karma. But there's four basic Lords of Karma, and under them is an innumerable number of helpers to balance off karma. Why do we need intelligent beings to assess karma and balance it off? Why do we need that?
Well, in any one life, we couldn't stand all of the karma to be placed upon us, so they regulate the karma that we can assimilate in any one life.
Okay, that's true. Look at it this way. On a physical level, you would think karma is basically cause and effect. If you initiate a certain cause, well, you're going to suffer a certain effect. So let's say you killed somebody. The basic idea is you got to come back in another life and somebody's going to kill you. And so that's really a balancing thing. Why would you need a lord of karma and his agents to figure out the best way for you to pay off karma? Why is it so complicated? What makes it so complicated? Yeah.
She was raising her hand.
So a lot of near-death experience people talk about going to a council after they die.
Right.
And there's like 12 of them usually sitting around a council table, and they counsel them on things that they were supposed to learn and things they still needed to learn, and they review other past lives. It seems like without that group of people retaining knowledge of everything that you've accumulated, you wouldn't have full awareness, I think, right after you die, of what your next steps need to be.
Okay, that's all true. But there's one particular ingredient that makes karma really complicated, that really takes high intelligence to figure out the best way to balance the scales.
Justice?
You can't.
Yeah, we need that justice. Yeah.
I don't think it's possible to do an exact effect of the karma that you do. It has to be in a different but similar way. You have to use judgment in order to figure that out.
Yeah, and in particular because of one problem that enters in that makes karma really complicated.
Free will?
That's part of it.
Does it have anything to do with like that Albert Einstein saying where it says that you can't solve a problem with the same mind that created it? So is it possible that there has to be people that are overseeing you that can see the whole picture, kind of similar to her, to provide the right form of justice?
Okay, that's a good comment, but not what we're looking for. What makes karma so complicated?
Well, tell us.
Because if it's just cause and effect, if somebody's murdered, then it's very simple. We throw you in the lump or you get murdered. Okay, that's really simple. But what types of harm do we do that is not so simple?
Mass killings.
What?
Mass killings.
Like if you're in a war.
Mass killings.
If you're in a war, you still kill somebody, but you're following orders and you're doing what you're told. And
but
you're
no, I'm saying like a serial killer, like a Hitler. So can't die.
Okay, what's above the physical? We're talking about
emotional,
a physical.
Emotional.
Say, murder is a physical act. What's above the physical?
Emotional.
Right, emotions. Okay, so if you tell a kid, for instance, he writes a poem or writes his first poem and he thinks he did really good, and the parent says, this isn't any good. You'll never amount to anything here. So he's not doing anything physical to the kid. He's not hitting him or producing any physical pain, but he's producing what kind of pain for that poor kid?
Psychic pain, yeah.
Emotional pain.
Yeah.
Okay? And how do you counterbalance emotional pain?
With love.
Yeah. If you're in a marriage and you have an affair, you're producing tremendous emotional pain to your partner. How do we balance that off? It's not like as simple as balancing off a physical harm like murder or stealing $100 from somebody or something like that. But the most pervasive pain that we suffer in this life is emotional pain. And this is why we need lords of karma, because the emotional pain requires high intelligence to be able to figure out the best way for that person that caused that emotional pain to go through something so that he understands what he did. And it's not something that we would necessarily be able to do on our own, you know.
A couple of thoughts. Reading Race and Initiation, there's the phrase in there, karma is woven into the fabric of creation.
Yeah.
And when I read that, I got it. I couldn't understand it, but I could feel it. So, and then I think another piece of the puzzle is avidya, ignorance. You know, just the example you used, you know, the parents saying, not intentionally causing emotional trauma, but harming the person. And so karma is not retributive. It's meant to teach you, to uplift you. And I think as someone is consciously walking a spiritual path, I mean, I think all of us look back and go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that, or fuck that, or whatever. You know, there's that correction yourself. And then there's the intent of sowing positive karma. You know, I think the Buddhists have a concept of merit. You can offset it once you become conscious of what you're doing. So
yeah.
Just a few different thoughts, and I don't think that speaks to why you need lords of karma, but I think it's the law. It's automatically set up, so it's going to happen. And
yeah, there's a lot that's automatic, but trying to figure out, like, if you betrayed your spouse, or maybe had a whole bunch of affairs, you know, so before we're born, or after death, as Susan pointed out, we get together with a council and they examine our life, and we get a feeling of the karma that we're going to have to pay off from that particular life, and also the good karma. There's not only bad karma, but there's a good karma. It's a little bit like money in the bank. Good karma is money in the bank, and bad karma is money corresponds to money you buy from the bank. So if you really screwed up on a physical level, paying off your karma is pretty simple. You could probably figure out how to do that on your own. But now it tells us that these lords of karma have many associates that help them out with the job. And this is indicated in these near-death experiences for it, and also there's been thousands of regressions. Michael Newton made thousands of them, and he points out that before we're born, we undergo we get advice from higher beings as to how to plan our life so that we can be able to pay off our karma. So if you did something that really created a lot of harm on an emotional level, maybe you didn't hurt anybody physically, but you hurt them emotionally, very complicated to figure out a plan that you could come down and pay that and go through an experience so you could understand the pain that you created for the other guy. And so you have these consultants on a higher level, which would be connected to the lords of karma. They will come and you will look over what your life is going to be, kind of like that sphere they had in Star Trek. What was the name of that?
Holodeck.
Holodeck, yeah. Kind of like the holodeck, and you can look over your life and see how it's going to play out. Now, if this happened, this would play out this way. If this happened, and the higher lives would say, well, we need to make this happen so you will really understand what you put that other person through. And so we plan out our lives with counsel from higher lives. And then when we get down here, we think, boy, why am I going through this? What did I do to deserve to a betrayal like I just experienced here? I would never do that sort of thing, but he did it in a past life. And now he's down here learning what it really felt like. And because he really understands what he made the other person feel like now, he's not going to do it again.
JJ, how does illusion come into this? Because there are people, for instance, Jesus will say something that is a truth. You know, he says things that were truth, but it really hurt a lot of people's feelings in whatever way. And, or for example, Charlie Kirk, he was saying things that hurt people's feelings, but he's not saying things that are hurtful. How necessarily that are hurtful? It's just how people interpret what is being said. Is there a caveat for, you know, I'm not saying anything mean, it's just you're interpreting it wrong. Is there still karma accrued?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because if a person teaches the truth, he's going to make a lot of enemies and hurt a lot of feelings, and there's no better example of that than Jesus. Jesus really irritated these guys so much they wanted to kill him. That's how much he irritated them. But it was their own fault. It wasn't something that he did that had any intentional purpose in creating harm. He merely taught what was true, and the people that disagreed with the truth, they're the ones that are generating karma because they're resisting the light. When you resist the light, you're creating karma. If you're giving the light, you're not creating any negative karma at all. Unless you understand that, and the Tibetan does point this out, that a lot of people are only ready for a certain amount of light. It says if you understand this and you give them too much light, it can stimulate them in a negative way. So the master teachers just figure out how much light a person could handle. And the temptation for a lot of people when they receive light, they think, oh, I want to go share this with everybody, so I'm going to go to these family members and tell them all about reincarnation, for instance. Okay, well, that's if they think about it, it's just probably going to create a problem. You know, so they could actually create some karma if they kind of knew what they were doing and try to introduce too much light to a person before he's ready for it. But the wise teacher will give just the amount of light that the people could handle. But in the case of Jesus, you know, his purpose was to give as much light as possible, and he gave out so much light that it blinded the people that were the authorities, and to the point that they wanted to kill him. But the amount of light he gave off was essential to happen, so he didn't get any karma from that. It's possible he does have some karma, because it says that Jesus has some karma, he does say, in connection with the Christian church. And he will be working to make corrections in the Christian church. Yeah.
So, real world example, and probably others, but I know you and Artie, I know Marnie, I think Rain, have all dealt with aged parents, grandparents, in our case, Alzheimer's, dementia, whatever. And Marnie's grandma, she would think sometimes she was married to me. She often thought her parents were alive. And I wonder if I was too hard in how I approached it. I have always approached it with the truth. And I said, you know, I insisted, I'm not your husband. You know, your parents are dead. And sometimes without any sympathy, and I don't know if how you guys handled that, and if I potentially incurred some karma for being a little bit firm that way and insisting that she accept the reality, or is our job to allow people to fade into their disreality?
Well, it's kind of a gray area, because you obviously fall on the highest you know. And we encounter many situations in life where you just don't know the right path to take for sure, and you just have to take your best guess. And then when you see the results, examine them, and then if you can make corrections and add them in. And you may develop some karma, but it wouldn't be very heavy duty, I wouldn't think. Yeah,
well, the problem with advanced dementia is they can't remember the correction.
Yeah.
So you're wasting your time. So you just, I did is just agree, you know, blah, 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 and or I'd say, I don't know, rather than to try to correct and say, no, here's the truth.
But what if they try and act on it and crawl in bed with you?
You got to set your boundary.
You put bed rails on the bed like I did.
Lock the door.
I switched the lock around, and then I wondered, oh, gosh, the trap in this poor person in her room, you know.
No,
you play her some music. Yeah.
I mean, I did kind things, that, you know, I had my moments, but I wonder about.
Well, you know, when you're drawing the line into being a bully, you know, that's negative karma.
I think with my mom, I had to determine what age she was mentally and treat her accordingly. Like when she tried to hit me,
yeah.
I would have to grab her hand to physically
stop
her.
And then the skin breaks, and then you
right.
feel shitty because
yeah.
skin's everywhere and blood. And
right, but I would grab her and I would just say, Mom, that's not appropriate.
Yeah.
I just put her arm down. I know you feel like hitting, but it's not appropriate.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Sometimes I've dealt with it okay, other times I think not.
I think it's probably one of the most challenging things you face.
Yeah.
Because you're not used to disciplining
your parents.
Your parents.
The